she understood it, and suddenly her winter passed, and the sun shone on her. "I stand in Minasanor, the Tower of the Sun," she said, "and behold, the shadow has departed. I will be a shield maiden no longer, nor vie with the great riders, nor take joy only in the songs of slaying. I will be a healer, and love all things that grow and are not barren." And again she looked at Faramir. "No longer do I desire to be a queen," she said. Then Faramir laughed merrily. "That is well," he said, "for I am not a king. Yet I will wed with a white lady of Rohan, if it be her will. And if she will, then let us cross the river, and in happier days let us dwell in fair Ithilien, and there make a garden. All things will grow with joy there, if the white lady comes." "Then must I leave my own people, man of Gondor?" she said. "And would you have your proud folk say of you, 'There goes a lord who tamed a wild shield maiden of the north. Was there no woman of the race of Numenor to choose?'" "I would," said Faramir. And he took her in his arms and kissed her under the sunlit sky. And he cared not that they stood high upon the walls in the sight of many. And many indeed saw them, and the light that shone about them as they came down from the walls and went hand in hand to the houses of healing. And to the warden of the houses Faramir said, "Here is the lady Eowyn of Rohan, and now she is healed." And the warden said, "Then I release her from my charge, and bid her farewell, and may she suffer never hurt nor sickness again. I commend her to the care of the steward of the city until her brother returns." But Eowyn said, "Yet now that I have leave to depart, I would remain. For this house has become to me of all dwellings the most blessed." And she remained there until King Eomer came. All things were now made ready in the city, and there was great concourse of people, for the tidings had gone out into all parts of Gondor, from Min Rimmon even to Pinnoth Gelin, and the far coasts of the sea. And all that could come to the city made haste to come. And the city was filled again with women and fair children that returned to their homes laden with flowers. And from Dol Amroth came the harpers that harped most skilfully in all the land. And there were players upon viols and upon flutes and upon horns of silver, and clear-voiced singers from the vales of Lebenin. At last an evening came, when from the walls the pavilions could be seen upon the field. And all night lights were burning as men watched for the dawn. And when the sun rose in the clear morning above the mountains in the east, upon which shadows lay no more, then all the bells rang, and all the banners broke and flowed in the wind, and upon the white tower of the citadel the standard of the stewards, bright argent like snow in the sun, bearing no charge nor device, was raised over Gondor for the last time. Now the captains of the west led their host towards the city, and folk saw them advance in line upon line, flashing and glinting in the sunrise and rippling like silver. And so they came before the gateway and halted a furlong from the walls. As yet no gates had been set up again, but a barrier was laid across the entrance to the city, and there stood men-at-arms in silver and black with long swords drawn. Before the barrier stood Faramir the steward, and Húrin, warden of the keys, and other captains of Gondor, and the lady Eowyn of Rohan, with Elfhelm of the Marshal, and many knights of the mark. And upon either side of the gate was a great press of fair people in raiment of many colours and garlands of flowers. So now there was a wide space before the walls of Minas Tirith, and it was hemmed in upon all sides by the knights and the soldiers of Gondor and of Rohan, and by the people of the city and of all parts of the land. A hush fell upon all, as out from the host stepped the Dúnedain in silver and grey, and before them came walking slow the Lord Aragorn. He was clad in black mail girt with silver, and he wore a long mantle of pure white, clasped at the throat with a great jewel of green that shone from afar. But his head was bare, save for a star upon his forehead, bound by a slender fillet of silver. With him were Eomer of Rohan, and the prince Imrahil, and Gandalf, robed all in white, and four small figures that many men marvelled to see. "Nay, cousin, they are not boys," said Yoreth to her kinswoman from Imloth Melwy, who stood beside her. "Those are Periain, out of the far country of the Halflings, where they are princes of great fame, it is said. I should know, for I had one to tend in the houses. They are small, but they are valiant. Why, cousin, one of them went with only his esquire into the Black Country, and fought with a Dark Lord all by himself, and set fire to his tower, if you can believe it. At least that is the tale in the city. That will be the one that walks with our Elfstone. They are dear friends, I hear. Now he is a marvel, the Lord Elfstone. Not too soft in his speech, mind you, but he has a golden heart, as the saying is, and he has the healing hands. The hands of the king are the hands of a healer, I said, and that was how it was all discovered. And Mithranda, he said to me, 'Yoreth, men will long remember your words, and—' But Yoreth was not permitted to continue the instruction of her kinswoman from the country, for a single trumpet rang, and a dead silence followed. Then forth from the gate went Faramir from Húrin of the Keys, and no others, save that behind them walked four men in the high helms and armour of the citadel, and they bore a great casket of black lebethron bound with silver. Faramir met Aragorn in the midst of those there assembled, and he knelt and said, 'The last steward of Gondor begs leave to surrender his office.' And he held out a white rod, but Aragorn took the rod and gave it back, saying, 'That office is not ended, and it shall be thine and thy heirs as long as my line shall last. Do now thy office.' Then Faramir stood up and spoke in a clear voice, 'Men of Gondor, hear now the steward of this realm. Behold, one has come to claim the kingship again at last. Here is Aragorn, son of Arathorn, chieftain of the Dunedain of Arnor, captain of the host of the west, bearer of the star of the north, wielder of the sword reforged, victorious in battle, whose hands bring healing, the Elfstone, Elessar of the line of Valandil, Isildur's son, Elendil, son of Numenor. Shall he be king and enter into the city and dwell there?' And all the host and all the people cried, 'Yea,' with one voice. And Eorah said to her kinswoman, 'This is just a ceremony such as we have in the city, cousin, for he has already entered, as I was telling you, and he said to me—' And then again she was obliged to silence, for Faramir spoke again, 'Men of Gondor, the law masters tell that it was the custom of old that the king should receive the crown from his father ere he died, or if that might not be, that he should go alone and take it from the hands of his father in the tomb where he was laid. But since things must now be done otherwise, using the authority of the steward, I have today brought hither from Rath Dinan the crown of Eanor, the last king, whose days passed in the time of our long fathers of old.' Then the guard stepped forward, and Faramir opened the casket, and he held up an ancient crown. It was shaped like the helms of the guards of the citadel, save that it was loftier, and it was all white, and the wings at either side were wrought of pearl and silver, in the likeness of the wings of a sea-bird, for it was the emblem of kings who came over the sea. And seven gems of adamant were set in the circlet, and upon its summit was set a single jewel, the light of which went up like a flame. Then Aragorn took the crown, and held it up, and said, 'Etiarello endorena utulien sinome maravan ar hildiniar ten ambarmetta.' And those were the words that Elendil spoke when he came up out of the sea on the wings of the wind. 'Out of the great sea to Middle-earth I am come. In this place will I abide, and my heirs, until the ending of the world.' Then, to the wonder of many, Aragorn did not put the crown upon his head, but gave it back to Faramir, and said,
By the labor and valor of many I have come into my inheritance. In token of this I would have the ring-bearer bring the crown to me, and let Mithrandir set it upon my head if he will. For he has been the mover of all that has been accomplished, and this is his victory." Then Frodo came forward, and took the crown from Faramir, and bore it to Gandalf. And Aragorn knelt, and Gandalf set the white crown upon his head, and said, "Now come the days of the king, and may they be blessed while the thrones of the Valar endure." But when Aragorn arose, all that beheld him gazed in silence, for it seemed to them that he was revealed to them now for the first time. Tall as the sea-kings of old, he stood above all that were near. Ancient of days he seemed, and yet in the flower of manhood, and wisdom sat upon his brow, and strength and healing were in his hands, and a light was about him. And then Faramir cried, "Behold the king!" And in that moment all the trumpets were blown, and the king Elessar went forth and came to the barrier, and Húrin of the Keys thrust it back, and amid the music of harp and of viol and of flute, and the singing of clear voices, the king passed through the flower-laden streets, and came to the citadel, and entered in. And the banner of the tree and the stars were unfurled upon the topmost tower, and the reign of King Elessar began, of which many songs have told. In his time the city was made more fair than it had ever been, even in the days of its first glory, and it was filled with trees and with fountains, and its gates were wrought of mithril and steel, and its streets were paved with white marble, and the folk of the mountain laboured in it, and the folk of the wood rejoiced to come there, and all was healed and made good, and the houses were filled with men and women and the laughter of children, and no window was blind, nor any courtyard empty. And after the ending of the third age of the world into the new age, it preserved the memory and the glory of the years that were gone. In the days that followed his crowning, the king sat on his throne in the halls of the kings and pronounced his judgments. And embassies came from many lands and peoples, from the east and the south, and from the borders of Mirkwood, and from Dunland in the west. And the king pardoned the Easterlings that had given themselves up, and sent them away free. And he made peace with the peoples of Harad. And the slaves of Mordor he released, and gave to them all the lands about Lake Noornan to be their own. And there were brought before him many to receive his praise and reward for their valour. And last the captain of the guard brought to him Beregond to be judged. And the king said to Beregond, "Beregond, by your sword blood was spilled in the hallows, where that is forbidden. Also you left your post without leave of lord or of captain. For these things of old death was the penalty. Now therefore I must pronounce your doom. All penalty is remitted for your valour in battle, and still more because all that you did was for the love of the Lord Faramir. Nonetheless, you must leave the guard of the citadel, and you must go forth from the city of Minas Tirith." Then the blood left Beregond's face, and he was stricken to the heart and bowed his head. But the king said, "So it must be, for you are appointed to the White Company, the guard of Faramir, Prince of Ithilien, and you shall be its captain and dwell in Eminanen in honour and peace, and in the service of him for whom you risked all to save him from death." And then Beregond, perceiving the mercy and justice of the king, was glad, and kneeling kissed his hand, and departed in joy and content. And Aragorn gave to Faramir Ithilien to be his princedom, and bade him dwell in the hills of Eminanen within sight of the city. "For," he said, "Minas Ithil in Morgul Vale shall be utterly destroyed, and though it may in time to come be made clean, no man may dwell there for many long years." And last of all Aragorn greeted Éomer of Rohan, and they embraced, and Aragorn said, "Between us there can be no word of giving or taking, nor of reward, for we are brethren. In happy hour did Eol ride from the north, and never has any league of peoples been more blessed, so that neither has ever failed the other, nor shall fail. Now, as you know, we have laid Theoden the Renowned in a tomb in the Hallows, and there he shall lie for ever among the kings of Gondor, if you will. Or, if you desire it, we will come to Rohan and bring him back to rest with his own people. And Éomer answered, Since the day when you rose before me out of the green grass of the downs, I have loved you, and that love shall not fail. But now I must depart for a while to my own realm, where there is much to heal and set in order. But as for the fallen, when all is made ready, we will return for him. But here let him sleep a while. And Eowyn said to Faramir, Now I must go back to my own land, and look on it once again, and help my brother in his labour. But when one whom I long loved as father is laid at last to rest, I will return. So the glad days passed, and on the 8th day of May the riders of Rohan made ready, and rode off by the north way, and with them went the sons of Elrond. All the roads were lined with people, to do them honour and praise them, from the gate of the city to the walls of the Pelennor. Then all others that dwelt afar went back to their homes rejoicing. But in the city there was labour of many willing hands to rebuild and renew and to remove all the scars of war and the memory of the darkness. The hobbits still remained in Minas Tirith, with Legolas and Gimli, for Aragorn was loath for the friendship to be dissolved. At last all such things must end, he said. But I would have you wait a little while longer, for the end of the deeds that you have shared in has not yet come. A day draws near that I have looked for in all the years of my manhood, and when it comes I would have my friends beside me. But of that day he would say no more. In those days the companions of the ring dwelt together in a fair house with Gandalf, and they went to and fro as they wished. And Frodo said to Gandalf, Do you know what this day is that Aragorn speaks of? For we are happy here, and I don't wish to go, but the days are running away and Bilbo's waiting, and the Shire is my home.
As for Bilbo, said Gandalf, he is waiting for the same day, and he knows what keeps you. And as for the passing of the days, it's now only May, and high summer is not yet in. And though all things may seem changed, as if an age of the world had gone by, yet to the trees and the grass it is less than a year since you set out.
Pippin, said Frodo, didn't you say that Gandalf was less close than of old? He was weary of his labours then, I think. Now he's recovering. And Gandalf said,
Many folk like to know beforehand what is to be set on the table, but those who have laboured to prepare the feast like to keep their secret, for wonder makes the words of praise louder, and Aragorn himself waits for a sign.
There came a day when Gandalf could not be found, and the companions wondered what was going forward. But Gandalf took Aragorn out from the city by night, and he brought him to the southern feet of Mount Mindonluin. And there they found a path made in ages past that few now dared to tread, for it led up onto the mountain to a high hollow where only the kings had been wont to go. And they went up by steep ways until they came to a high field below the snows that clad the lofty peaks, and it looked down over the precipice that stood behind the city. And standing there they surveyed the lands, for the morning was come. And they saw the towers of the city far below them, like white pencils touched by the sunlight. And all the vale of Anduin was like a garden, and the mountains of shadow were veiled in a golden mist. Upon the one side their sight reached to the grey Emin Wheel, and the glint of Rauros was like a star twinkling far off. And upon the other side they saw the river like a ribbon laid down to Pelargir, and beyond that was a light on the hem of the sky that spoke of the sea. And Gandalf said,
This is your realm, and the heart of the greater realm that shall be. The third age of the world is ended, and the new age is begun. And it is your task to order its beginning and to preserve what may be preserved. For though much has been saved, much must now pass away, and the power of the three rings also is ended. And all the lands that you see, and those that lie round about them, shall be dwellings of men. For the time comes of the dominion of men, and the elder kindred shall fade or depart.
I know it well, dear friend, said Aragorn, but I would still have your counsel.
Not for long now, said Gandalf. The third age was my age. I was the enemy of Sauron, and my work is finished. I shall go soon. The burden must lie now upon you and your kindred.
But I shall die, said Aragorn, for I am a mortal man. And though being what I am, and of the race of the West unmingled, I shall have life far longer than other men, yet that is but a little while. And when those who are now in the wombs of women are born and have grown old, I too shall grow old. And who then shall govern Gondor, and those who look to this city as to their queen, if my desire be not granted? The tree in the court of the fountain is still withered and barren. When shall I see a sign that it will ever be otherwise?
Turn your face from the green world, and look where all seems barren and cold, said Gandalf.
Then Aragorn turned, and there was a stony slope behind him running down from the skirts of the snow. And as he looked, he was aware that alone there in the waste a growing thing stood. And he climbed to it, and saw that out of the very edge of the snow there sprang a sapling tree no more than 3 foot high. Already it had put forth young leaves long and shapely, dark above and silver beneath, and upon its slender crown it bore one small cluster of flowers whose white petals shone like the sunlit snow. Then Aragorn cried,
"Yea, O Tuvienius, I have found it! Lo! Here is a scion of the eldest of trees. But how comes it here? For it is not itself yet 7 years old."
And Gandalf coming looked at it and said,
"Verily this is a sapling of the line of Nimloth the Fair, and that was a seedling of Galathelion, and that a fruit of Telperion of many names, eldest of trees. Who shall say how it comes here in the appointed hour? But this is an ancient aloe. And ere the kings failed, or the tree withered in the court, a fruit must have been set here. For it is said that, though the fruit of the tree comes seldom to ripeness, yet the life within may then lie sleeping through many long years, and none can foretell the time in which it will awake. Remember this, for if ever a fruit ripens, it should be planted, lest the line die out of the world. Here it has lain hidden on the mountain, even as the race of Elendil lay hidden in the wastes of the north. Yet the line of Nimloth is older far than your line, King Alessar."
Then Aragorn laid his hand gently to the sapling, and lo! It seemed to hold only lightly to the earth, and it was removed without hurt, and Aragorn bore it back to the citadel. Then the withered tree was uprooted, but with reverence, and they did not burn it, but laid it to rest in the silence of Rath Dinan. And Aragorn planted the new tree in the court by the fountain, and swiftly and gladly it began to grow. And when the month of June entered in, it was laden with blossom.
"The sign has been given," said Aragorn, "and the day is not far off."
And he set watchmen upon the walls. It was the day before midsummer when messengers came from Armondine to the city. And they said that there was a riding of fair folk out of the north, and they drew near now to the walls of the Pelennor. And the king said,
"At last they have come. Let all the city be made ready."
Upon the very eve of midsummer, when the sky was blue as sapphire and white stars opened in the east, but the west was still golden, and the air was cool and fragrant, the riders came down the north way to the gates of Minas Tirith.
First rode Elrohir and Eladan with a banner of silver,
And then came Glorfindel and Erastor, and all the household of Rivendell. And after them came the Lady Galadriel and Celeborn, Lord of Lothlorien, riding upon white steeds, and with them many fair folk of their land, grey-cloaked with white gems in their hair. And last came Master Elrond, mighty among elves and men, bearing the sceptre of Annúminas, and beside him, upon a grey palfrey, rode Arwen his daughter, even star of her people. And Frodo, when he saw her come glimmering in the evening, with stars on her brow and a sweet fragrance about her, was moved with great wonder, and he said to Gandalf, "At last I understand why we've waited. This is the ending. Now not day only shall be beloved, but night too shall be beautiful and blessed, and all its fear pass away." Then the king welcomed his guests, and they alighted. And Elrond surrendered the sceptre, and laid the hands of his daughter in the hand of the king, and together they went up into the high city, and all the stars flowered in the sky. And Aragorn the king Elessar wedded Arwen Undomiel in the city of the kings upon the day of Midsummer, and the tale of their long waiting and labours was come to fulfilment. Chapter 6 Many Partings. When the days of rejoicing were over at last, the companions thought of returning to their own homes. And Frodo went to the king, as he was sitting with the queen Arwen by the fountain, and she sang a song of Valinor while the tree grew and blossomed. They welcomed Frodo and rose to greet him, and Aragorn said,
"I know what you've come to say, Frodo. You wish to return to your own home. Well, dearest friend, the tree grows best in the land of its sires, but for you in all the lands of the West there will ever be a welcome. And though your people have had little fame in the legends of the great, they will now have more renown than any wide realms that are no more."
"It is true that I wish to go back to the Shire," said Frodo, "but first I must go to Rivendell. For if there could be anything wanting in a time so blessed, I missed Bilbo, and I was grieved when among all the household of Elrond I saw that he was not come."
"Do you wonder at that, Ringbearer?" said Arwen. "For you know the power of that thing which is now destroyed, and all that was done by that power is now passing away. But your kinsman possessed this thing longer than you. He is ancient in years now, according to his kind. And he awaits you, for he will not again make any long journey, save one."
"Then I beg leave to depart soon," said Frodo.
"In 7 days we will go," said Aragorn, "for we shall ride with you far on the road, even as far as the country of Rohan. In 3 days now Éomer will return hither to bear Théoden back to rest in the Mark, and we shall ride with him to honour the fallen. But now, before you go, I will confirm the words that Faramir spoke to you, and you are made free for ever of the realm of Gondor, and all your companions likewise. And if there were any gifts that I could give to match with your deeds, you should have them. But whatever you desire, you shall take with you, and you shall ride in honour and arrayed as princes of the land." But the Queen Arwen said, "A gift I will give you, for I am the daughter of Elrond. I shall not go with him now when he departs to the Havens, for mine is the choice of Lúthien, and as she, so have I chosen both the sweet and the bitter. But in my stead you shall go, Ringbearer, when the time comes, and if you then desire it. If your hurts grieve you still, and the memory of your burden is heavy, then you may pass into the West, until all your wounds and weariness are healed. But wear this now in memory of Elfstone and Evenstar, with whom your life has been woven." And she took a white gem like a star that lay upon her breast, hanging upon a silver chain, and she set the chain about Frodo's neck. "When the memory of the fear and the darkness troubles you," she said, "this will bring you aid." In 3 days, as the king had said,
Éomer of Rohan came riding to the city, and with him came an Eorid of the fairest knights of the mark. He was welcomed, and when they sat all at table in Merethrond, the great hall of feasts, he beheld the beauty of the ladies that he saw, and was filled with great wonder. And before he went to his rest, he sent for Gimli the dwarf, and he said to him,
"Gimli, Gloin's son, have you your axe ready?"
"Nay, lord," said Gimli, "but I can speedily fetch it, if there be need."
"You shall judge," said Éomer, "for there are certain rash words concerning the lady in the golden wood that lie still between us, and now I have seen her with my eyes."
"Well, lord," said Gimli, "and what say you now?"
"Alas," said Éomer, "I will not say that she is the fairest lady that lives."
"Then I must go for my axe," said Gimli.
"But first I will plead this excuse," said Éomer. "Had I seen her in other company, I would have said all that you could wish. But now I will put Queen Arwen Evenstar first, and I am ready to do battle on my own part with any who deny me. Shall I call for my sword?" Then Gimli bowed low.
"Nay, you are excused for my part, lord," he said. "You have chosen the evening, but my love is given to the morning, and my heart forebodes that soon it will pass away for ever."
At last the day of departure came, and a great and fair company made ready to ride north from the city. Then the kings of Gondor and Rohan went to the hallows, and they came to the tombs in Rath Dinan, and they bore away King Theoden upon a golden bier, and passed through the city in silence. Then they laid the bier upon a great wain with riders of Rohan all about it, and his banner borne before. And Merry, being Theoden's esquire, rode upon the wain, and kept the arms of the king. For the other companions, steeds were furnished, according to their stature, and Frodo and Samwise rode at Aragorn's side, and Gandalf rode upon Shadowfax, and Pippin rode with the knights of Gondor, and Legolas and Gimli, as ever, rode together upon Arod. In that riding went also Queen Arwen, and Celeborn and Galadriel with their folk, and Elrond and his sons, and the princes of Dol Amroth and of Ithilien, and many captains and knights. Never had any king of the mark such company upon the road as went with Theoden Thengel's son to the land of his home. Without haste and at peace they passed into Anorion, and they came to the grey woods under Armondine, and there they heard a sound as of drums beating in the hills, though no living thing could be seen. Then Aragorn let the trumpets be blown, and heralds cried,
"Behold, the King Elessar is come. The forest of Druarden he gives to Han Burihan and to his folk, to be their own for ever, and hereafter let no man enter it without their leave." Then the drums rolled loudly and were silent. At length, after 15 days of journey, the wain of King Theoden passed through the green fields of Rohan and came to Edoras, and there they all rested. The golden hall was arrayed with fair hangings, and it was filled with light, and there was held the highest feast that it had known since the days of its building. For after 3 days the men of the mark prepared the funeral of Theoden, and he was laid in a house of stone, with his arms and many other fair things that he had possessed. And over him was raised a great mound, covered with green turves of grass and of white evermind. And now there were 8 mounds on the east side of the barrow-field. Then the riders of the king's house upon white horses rode round about the barrow and sang together a song of Theoden, Thengel's son, that Gleowine his minstrel made. And he made no other song after. The slow voices of the riders stirred the hearts even of those who did not know the speech of that people. But the words of the song brought a light to the eyes of the folk of the mark, as they heard again afar the thunder of the hooves of the north, and the voice of Eol crying above the battle upon the field of Celebrant. And the tale of the kings rolled on, and the horn of Helm was loud in the mountains,
until the darkness came, and King Theoden arose, and rode through the shadow to the fire, and died in splendour, even as the sun, returning beyond hope, gleamed upon Min Dolwyn in the morning.
Out of doubt, out of dark, to the day's rising, he rode singing in the sun, sword unsheathing, hope he rekindled, and in hope ended, over death, over dread, over doom lifted. Out of loss, out of life, unto long glory.
But Merry stood at the foot of the green mound, and he wept. And when the song was ended, he arose and cried, Theoden King, farewell, as a father you were to me for a little while. Farewell. When the burial was over and the weeping of women was stilled, and Theoden was left at last alone in his barrow, then folk gathered to the golden hall for the great feast and put away their sorrow. For Theoden had lived to full years, and ended in honour no less than the greatest of his sires. And when the time came that in the custom of the mark they should drink to the memory of the kings, Eowyn, Lady of Rohan, came forth, golden as the sun and white as snow, and she bore a filled cup to Éomer. Then a minstrel and law-master stood up, and named all the names of the lords of the mark in their order. Eol the Young, and Brego, builder of the hall, and Aldor, brother of Baldor the Hapless, and Freya, and Freyawine, and Goldwine, and Deor, and Gram, and Helm, who lay hid in Helm's Deep when the mark was overrun. And so ended the nine mounds of the west side, for in that time the line was broken. And after came the mounds of the east side, Freyalaf, Helm's sister son, and Leofa, and Walda, and Folka, and Folkwine, and Fengal, and Thengal, and Theoden the latest. And when Theoden was named, Éomer drained the cup. Then Éowyn bade those that served to fill the cups, and all there assembled rose and drank to the new king, crying, Hail, Éomer, king of the mark! At the last, when the feast drew to an end, Éomer arose and said, Now this is the funeral feast of Theoden the king, but I will speak, ere we go, of tidings of joy. For he would not grudge that I should do so, since he was ever a father of Eowyn, my sister. Hear then, all my guests, fair folk of many realms, such as have never before been gathered in this hall. Faramir, steward of Gondor, and prince of Ithilien, asks that Eowyn, Lady of Rohan, should be his wife, and she grants it full willing. Therefore they shall be troth-plighted before you all. And Faramir and Eowyn stood forth, and set hand in hand, and all there drank to them, and were glad. Thus, said Éomer, is the friendship of the Mark and of Gondor bound with a new bond, and the more do I rejoice. No niggard are you, Éomer, said Aragorn, to give thus to Gondor the fairest thing in your realm. Then Éowyn looked in the eyes of Aragorn, and she said, Wish me joy, my liege lord and healer. And he answered, I have wished thee joy ever since first I saw thee. It heals my heart to see thee now in bliss. When the feast was over, those who were to go took leave of King Éomer. Aragorn and his knights, and the people of Lórien and of Rivendell, made ready to ride. But Faramir and Imrahil remained at Edoras, and Arwen Evenstar remained also, and she said farewell to her brethren.
None saw her last meeting with Elrond, her father, for they went up into the hills, and there spoke long together, and bitter was their parting that should endure beyond the ends of the world. At the last, before the guests set out, Éomer and Éowyn came to Merry, and they said, "Farewell now, Merry Ardoch of the Shire, and Hold Wine of the Mark. Ride to good fortune, and ride back soon to our welcome." And Éomer said, "Kings of old would have laden you with gifts that Owain could not bear for your deeds upon the fields of Mundburg. And yet you will take naught, you say, but the arms that were given to you. This I suffer, for indeed I have no gift that is worthy, but my sister begs you to receive this small thing as a memorial of Durnhelm and of the horns of the Mark at the coming of the morning." Then Éowyn gave to Merry an ancient horn, small but cunningly wrought, all of fair silver, with a baldric of green. And rites had engraven upon it swift horsemen riding in a line that wound about it from the tip to the mouth, and there were set runes of great virtue. "This is an heirloom of our house," said Éowyn. "It was made by the dwarves, and came from the hoard of Skatha the Worm. Eol the Young brought it from the north. He that blows it at need shall set fear in the hearts of his enemies, and joy in the hearts of his friends, and they shall hear him and come to him." Then Merry took the horn, for it could not be refused, and he kissed Eowyn's hand, and they embraced him, and so they parted for that time. Now the guests were ready, and they drank the stirrup cup, and with great praise and friendship they departed, and came at length to Helm's Deep, and there they rested 2 days. Then Legolas repaid his promise to Gimli, and went with him to the glittering caves, and when they returned he was silent, and would say only that Gimli alone could find fit words to speak of them. "And never before has a dwarf claimed a victory over an elf in a contest of words," said he. "Now, therefore, let us go to Fangorn and set the score right." From Deeping Combe they rode to Isengard, and saw how the Ents had busied themselves. All the stone circle had been thrown down and removed, and the land within was made into a garden filled with orchards and trees, and a stream ran through it. But in the midst of all there was a lake of clear water, and out of it the tower of Orthonk rose still, tall and impregnable, and its black rock was mirrored in the pool. For a while the travellers sat where once the old gates of Isengard had stood, and there were now 2 tall trees like sentinels at the beginnings of a green-bordered path that ran towards Orthonk. And they looked in wonder at the work that had been done, but no living thing could they see far or near.
But presently they heard a voice calling, "Hum, hum, hum, hum!" And there came Treebeard, striding down the path to greet them with Quickbeam at his side. "Welcome to the Treegarth of Orthonk," he said. "I knew that you were coming, but I was at work up the valley. There is much still to be done. But you have not been idle either. Away in the south and the east, I hear, and all that I hear is good, very good."
Then Treebeard praised all their deeds, of which he seemed to have full knowledge, and at last he stopped and looked long at Gandalf.
"Well, come now," he said. "You have proved the mightiest, and all your labours have gone well. Where now would you be going, and why do you come here?"
"To see how your work goes, my friend," said Gandalf, "and to thank you for your aid in all that has been achieved."
"Hum, well, that is fair enough," said Treebeard. "For to be sure, Ents have played their part. And not only in dealing with that, that accursed tree-slayer that dwelt here, for there was a great inrush of those Brarum, those evil-eyed, black-handed, bow-legged, flint-hearted, claw-fingered, foul-bellied, bloodthirsty, Morimite Sincaonda, whom, well, since you are hasty folk and their full name is as long as years of torment, those vermin of orcs. And they came over the river and down from the north and all round the woods of Laurelindorinan, which they could not get into, thanks to the great ones who are here.
He bowed to the Lord and Lady of Lorien.
And these same foul creatures were more than surprised to meet us out on the wold, for they had not heard of us before, though that might be said also of better folk. And not many will remember us, for not many escaped us alive, and the river had most of those. But it was well for you, for if they had not met us, then the king of the grassland would not have ridden far, and if he had, there would have been no home to return to.
We know it well, said Aragorn, and never shall it be forgotten in Minas Tirith or in Edoras.
Never is too long a word even for me,
said Treebeard.
Not while your kingdoms last, you mean. But they will have to last long indeed to seem long to Ents.
The new age begins, said Gandalf,
and in this age it may well prove that the kingdoms of men shall outlast you, Fangorn, my friend. But now come tell me, what of the task that I set you? How is Saruman? Is he not weary of Orthanc yet? For I do not suppose that he will think you have improved the view from his windows.
Treebeard gave Gandalf a long look, a most cunning look, Merry thought.
Ah, he said, I thought you would come to that. Weary of Orthanc? Very weary at last, but not so weary of his tower as he was weary of my voice, whom I gave him some long tales, or at least what might be thought long in your speech.
Then why did he stay to listen?
Did you go into Orthanc? Asked Gandalf. No, not into Orthanc, said Treebeard. But he came to his window and listened, because he could not get news in any other way, and though he hated the news, he was greedy to have it, and I saw that he heard it all. But I added a great many things to the news that it was good for him to think of. He grew very weary. He always was hasty. That was his ruin.
I observe, my good Fangorn, said Gandalf, that with great care you say dwelt, was, grew. What about is? Is he dead?
No, not dead, so far as I know, said Treebeard. But he is gone. Yes, he is gone 7 days. I let him go. There was little left of him when he crawled out, and as for that worm creature of his, he was like a pale shadow. Now do not tell me, Gandalf, that I promised to keep him safe, for I know it. But things have changed since then, and I kept him until he was safe, safe from doing any more harm. You should know that above all I hate the caging of live things, and I will not keep even such creatures as these caged beyond great need. A snake without fangs may crawl where he will.
You may be right, said Gandalf, but this snake had still one tooth left, I think. He had the poison of his voice, and I guess that he persuaded you, even you, Treebeard, knowing the soft spot in your heart. Well, he's gone, and there's no more to be said. But the Tower of Orthanc now goes back to the king to whom it belongs, though maybe he will not need it. That will be seen later, said Aragorn, but I will give to Ents all this valley to do with as they will, as long as they keep a watch upon Orthanc and see that none enter it without my leave.
It is locked, said Treebeard. I made Saruman lock it and give me the keys. Quickbeam has them.
Quickbeam bowed like a tree bending in the wind and handed to Aragorn two great black keys of intricate shape, joined by a ring of steel. Now I thank you once more, said Aragorn, and I bid you farewell. May your forest grow again in peace. When this valley is filled, there is room and to spare west of the mountains where once you walked long ago.
Treebeard's face became sad. "Forests may grow," he said. "Woods may spread, but not Ents. There are no Entings."
"Yet maybe there is now more hope in your search," said Aragorn. "Lands will lie open to you eastward that have long been closed." But Treebeard shook his head and said,
"It is far to go, and there are too many men there in these days. But I'm forgetting my manners. Will you stay here and rest a while? And maybe there are some that would be pleased to pass through Fangorn Forest and so shorten their road home."
He looked at Celeborn and Galadriel. But all save Legolas said that they must now take their leave and depart either south or west. "Come, Gimli," said Legolas. "Now by Fangorn's leave I will visit the deep places of the Entwood and see such trees as are nowhere else to be found in Middle-earth. You shall come with me and keep your word, and thus we will journey on together to our own lands in Mirkwood and beyond." To this Gimli agreed, though with no great delight, it seemed.
"Here, then, at last, comes the ending of the Fellowship of the Ring," said Aragorn. "Yet I hope that ere long you will return to my land with the help that you promised."
"We will come, if our lords allow it," said Gimli. "Well, farewell, my hobbits. You should come safe to your homes now, and I shall not be kept a week for fear of your peril. We will send word when we may, and some of us may yet meet at times, but I fear that we shall not all be gathered together ever again."
Then Treebeard said farewell to each of them in turn, and he bowed three times slowly and with great reverence to Celeborn and Galadriel.
"It is long, long since we met by stock or by stone. Ah, Vanemar, Vanemar, Leon and Nostari," he said. "It is said that we should meet only thus at the ending, for the world is changing. I feel it in the water, I feel it in the earth, and I smell it in the air. I do not think we shall meet again."
And Celeborn said,
"I do not know, eldest."
But Galadriel said, "Not in Middle-earth, nor until the lands that lie under the wave are lifted up again. Then in the willow meads of Tasarnan we may meet in the spring. Farewell." Last of all, Merry and Pippin said good-bye to the old Ent, and he grew gayer as he looked at them.
"Well, my merry folk," he said, "will you drink another draught with me before you go?"
"Indeed we will," they said, and he took them aside into the shade of one of the trees, and there they saw that a great stone jar had been set. And Treebeard filled three bowls, and they drank. And they saw his strange eyes looking at them over the rim of his bowl.
Take care," he said, "for you have already grown since I saw you last."
And they laughed and drained their bowls.
"Well, goodbye," he said, "and don't forget that if you hear any news of the Entwives in your land, you will send word to me."
Then he waved his great hands to all the company and went off into the trees. The travellers now rode with more speed, and they made their way towards the Gap of Rohan. And Aragorn took leave of them at last, close to that very place where Pippin had looked into the stone of Orthonk. The hobbits were grieved at this parting, for Aragorn had never failed them, and he had been their guide through many perils. "I wish we could have a stone that we could see all our friends in," said Pippin, "and that we could speak to them from far away."
"Only one now remains that you could use," answered Aragorn, "for you would not wish to see what the stone of Minas Tirith would show you. But the Palantir of Orthonk the king will keep, to see what is passing in his realm and what his servants are doing. For do not forget, Peregrine Took, that you are a knight of Gondor, and I do not release you from your service. You are going now on leave, but I may recall you. And remember, dear friends of the Shire, that my realm lies also in the north, and I shall come there one day."
Then Aragorn took leave of Celeborn and Galadriel, and the lady said to him, "Elfstone, through darkness you have come to your hope, and have now all your desire. Use well the days." But Celeborn said, "Kinsman, farewell. May your doom be other than mine, and your treasure remain with you to the end." With that they parted, and it was then the time of sunset. And when, after a while, they turned and looked back, they saw the King of the West sitting upon his horse with his knights about him, and the falling sun shone upon them, and made all their harness to gleam like red gold, and the white mantle of Aragorn was turned to a flame. Then Aragorn took the green stone and held it up, and there came a green fire from his hand. Soon the dwindling company, following the Isen, turned west and rolled through the gap into the wastelands beyond, and then they turned northwards and passed over the borders of Dunland. The Dunlendings fled and hid themselves, for they were afraid of elvish folk, though few indeed ever came to their country. But the travellers did not heed them, for they were still a great company, and were well provided with all that they needed, and they went on their way at their leisure, setting up their tents when they would. On the sixth day since their parting from the king, they journeyed through a wood, climbing down from the hills at the feet of the misty mountains that now marched on their right hand. As they came out again into the open country at sundown, they overtook an old man leaning on a staff, and he was clothed in rags of grey or dirty white, and at his heels went another beggar, slouching and whining.
"Well, Saruman," said Gandalf, "where are you going?"
"What is that to you?" he answered. "Will you still order my goings, and are you not content with my ruin?"
"You know the answers," said Gandalf. "No and no. But in any case the time of my labours now draws to an end. The king has taken on the burden. If you had waited at Orthonk, you would have seen him, and he would have shown you wisdom and mercy."
"Then all the more reason to have left sooner," said Saruman, "for I desire neither of him. Indeed, if you wish for an answer to your first question, I am seeking a way out of his realm."
"Then once more you are going the wrong way," said Gandalf, "and I see no hope in your journey. But will you scorn our help, for we offered it to you?"
"To me?" said Saruman. "Nay, pray do not smile at me. I prefer your frowns, and as for the lady here, I don't trust her. She always hated me, and schemed for your part. I don't doubt that she has brought you this way to have the pleasure of gloating over my poverty. Had I been warned of your pursuit, I would have denied you the pleasure."
"Saruman," said Galadriel, "we have other errands, and other cares that seem to us more urgent than hunting for you. Say rather that you are overtaken by good fortune, for now you have a last chance."
"If it be truly the last, I'm glad," said Saruman, "for I shall be spared the trouble of refusing it again. All my hopes are ruined, but I would not share yours, if you have any." For a moment his eyes kindled. "Go," he said. "I did not spend long study on these matters for naught. You've doomed yourselves, and you know it. And it will afford me some comfort as I wander to think that you pulled down your own house when you destroyed mine. And now, what ship will bear you back across so wide a sea?" he mocked. "It will be a grey ship, and full of ghosts." He laughed, but his voice was cracked and hideous.
"Get up, you idiot!" he shouted to the other beggar, who had sat down on the ground, and he struck him with his staff. "Turn about! If these fine folk are going our way, then we will take another. Get on, or I'll give you no crust for your supper."
The beggar turned and slouched past, whimpering.
"Poor old dreamer! Poor old dreamer! Always beaten and cursed! How I hate him! I wish I could leave him!"
"Then leave him," said Gandalf.
But Wormtongue only shot a glance of his bleared eyes full of terror at Gandalf, and then shuffled quickly past behind Saruman.
As the wretched pair passed by the company, they came to the hobbits, and Saruman stopped and stared at them, but they looked at him with pity.
"So you've come to gloat too, have you, my urchins?" he said. "You don't care what a beggar lacks, do you?